Deine Zukunft verdient mehr Sicherheit. Die Jansky Days gehen in die nächste Runde. Zukunftsforscher Sven Gabor Jansky möchte mit dir über deine drängendsten Zukunftsfragen sprechen und dir Perspektiven für dein persönliches Zukunftsbild geben. Sichere dir jetzt deinen Platz für das Event in 2022. Den Link für die aktuellen Termine findest du in den Shownotes.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu deinem Zukunftspodcast, dem Podcast über Zukunft, Innovationen und inspirierende Erfolgsgeschichten. Ich bin Sven Gabor Jansky, Zukunftsforscher, Leiter des größten Zukunftsinstituts in Europa und, wenn du willst, dein Zukunftscoach. In diesem Podcast will ich dich unterstützen, deine bestmögliche Zukunft zu erkennen, zu entwickeln und zu erreichen. Denn deine Zukunft beginnt jetzt. Also, los geht's! Heute geht es wieder um das Thema Genetik. Ich weiß, über Genetik haben wir schon oft gesprochen hier im Zukunftsmacher-Podcast, aber versprochen, heute geht es um ein ganz besonderes Stück Information, ganz besonderes Stück Inspiration, weil ich habe keinen geringeren eingeladen als den besten, den bekanntesten, den berühmtesten Genetiker aus Russland. Denis Rebrikov heißt er und leitet das Genetikinstitut an dem Moskauer Kulakow-Institut. Das ist ein Institut an der bekannten Pirogov-Universität, also das bekannteste Gen-Lab in Russland. Und man kann Denis Rebrikov kennen, ihr könnt schon mal von ihm gelesen haben, weil als damals, vor 3 Jahren ungefähr, ihr erinnert euch vielleicht, ein chinesischer Wissenschaftler eine genetische Veränderung vorgenommen hat an 2 noch nicht geborenen Zwillingskindern, denen geht's übrigens inzwischen ziemlich gut, diesen Zwillingskindern, er hat ihnen eine Krankheit rausgeschnitten und ist dafür in den Knast gegangen, also der Chinese, ist 3 Jahre in den Knast gegangen und als der in den Knast ging, sagte Denis Rebrikov und wurde weltweit in allen Zeitungen damit zitiert, ich bin der Nächste, der genau diese Operation macht. Nun, zum Glück, Denis ist noch nicht im Knast, sondern konnte beim Zukunftskongress des Jahres 2021, im November 2021 in München dabei sein und hat sich sozusagen meinen Fragen nach der Zukunft gestellt. Und ich habe ein langes Interview mit ihm geführt. Er hat uns seine Prognosen der nächsten 10 Jahre, die Roadmap der Genetik in dieser Welt bis zum Jahr 2031 präsentiert. Und das, was er präsentiert hat, das kann ich jetzt schon sagen, das ist spektakulär. Das musst du hören und wahrscheinlich musst du es auch noch deinen Freundinnen und Freunden erzählen. Aber von vorn, hier ist Denis Rebrikov, lass dich inspirieren.
Denis Rebrikov is the vice rector of the Pirogov Medical University in Moscow in Russia. He is the head of the genome editing lab in the Kulakov Medical Center in Moscow, and he is one of the best known names in the world of genome editing. What means editing? It means cutting diseases out of the genome. Probably one of the most progressive technologies nowadays, with the biggest potential for the life of our kids, but also one of the biggest controversial questions about the future. So I see Denis. Denis is here. Denis, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Perfect. Hi, Denis. When we saw last time, I promised you I bring you to Munich in person for this conference, and we really tried everything, but the German embassy was in COVID fear, and so we
because the pandemic, yeah, coronavirus.
Yeah. So sorry for this. That's why we meet virtually. But next time, and this is what I already want to do today, is to invite you to meet in person next year here in the conference. This would be great, and probably we came somehow over the COVID things. So how is COVID situation in Russia? Is it also connected with so much fear like in Germany?
We have very big country, so in different regions the situation is different. But I think we looks like standard Europe country. If you are talking about the number of people with coronavirus disease, and we have maybe, as you know, we have a good situation with vaccination. We have at least 3 vaccines from coronavirus, and people can get it for free in Moscow. I think in every, practically in every region of Moscow, you can take it. So now the percent of people with vaccination is relatively high.
Okay. Good. Great to hear. But today we don't talk about the future of COVID. We discuss the future of genetics, and you will give us an overview on this future of genetics, and then let's go into discussion and discuss some technological, some philosophical, some questions we will have to discuss. So, but first of all, Dennis, this is your stage. Please give us your picture of the future by the year 2031.
Okay. My presentation will be about the future of genetics, and this future is not very far from us. It's, I think, 10, maybe 20 years. First of all, I'd like to make some short description of what is genetic information. Every cell of our organism has the DNA molecules, and these DNA molecules has the instruction for building our body. It's like an operating system in the computer, like Windows. And scientists call all these DNA molecules like genome. It's our genome, and we have 2 copies of our genome, one from mother and another from father. Information in the DNA is written by a specific genetic code. And if I'll make the parallels with Windows, we can call these genes like files in program. Our program, our genetic program, consists of about 20,000 files, so 20,000 genes, and takes only about 50 megabytes on 3 gigabyte DNA drive. It's very small flash drive or hard drive, as you can you see. For example, Windows, standard computer Windows, takes about 20 gigabytes and takes about 100,000 files. We have several systems how we can change the genetic information, how we can change our DNA. And mostly usable system is CRISPR-Cas. As you know, the last year, this technology gets Nobel Prize. And all scientists now use this technology to change DNA program. It's very simple, fast, and cheap. So 100 and maybe 1,000 laboratories around the world use this DNA programming language to change our genetic program. What does the genetic program determine? Practically everything. It's not only body type, It's also intelligence, character, the diseases. Maybe you know some people can't have the HIV, for example, because they have genetic resistance to HIV, and then so on. But the impact of genetic information on the health and disease is different. Some situations has 100% impact. For example, monogenic diseases like, for example, hemophilia. If you have mutations in genes coding these proteins, you will have hemophilia for 100%. But sometimes impact is not so big. For example, diabetes. Even if you have some mutations, some gene alleles, you will not have diabetes for 100%, only for some probability. And also stroke, and also different situations. These slides show the chromosomes, which I represent like flash drives. And all our program written on the 23 pairs of flash drives. This is really small flash drives, only about several hundred megabases. today, in a genetic era, you must have your complete coding information. We call it exome. Exome is the coding regions of your genetic program. It's only, as I told you, it's only 50 megabase. Or you also can identify your genome. It's bigger. It's about 100 times bigger, because coding information is only about 1% of all genome. You should have it in your medical record, and you will get the knowledge about the genetic bottlenecks of your body. And the consequences of the genetic program will be the human dividing into the groups by different genotype, because sometimes your genotype is not very applicable to your job, for example, or we will have the different health insurance price because we have different genes. If you have predisposition to the cancer, to oncology, oncological diseases, in some countries, the insurance company can say, well, you have high probability of cancer, so let's make your insurance higher, more expensive for you, because you have high probability. And also we will have some value of our genotype, and this value will be different in different people. You can see this. I make here the link to the movie which called Gattaca. It's like a DNA sequence, GATTACA. It's like some element of our DNA sequence. In this movie, you can see the nearest future where the people where we have discrimination caused on the DNA sequence on our genome. If we have genome editing systems, so what can we do with genetic problems? Because all we have some genetic problems. Every people has several broken genes. Each of you has several broken genes, but you have normal health because this mutation only in one copy of your genetic information, only in one flash drive, and the second flash drive has the normal DNA sequence, and you have no disease. But if mutations combined in the baby from both parents, we will have hereditary disease. And now in the database, we have about 7,000 diseases described for 7,000 files, broken files in our program. It's like phenylketonuria, cystic fibrosis, Duchenne myodystrophy, Huntington disease, hemophilia, and so on. It's a very, very big list of monogenic diseases. All of them is very rare. It's orphan diseases. One newborn for 10,000 newborns, or maybe 100,000. But if we will combine all these probabilities, we will have about 1% of newborns have hereditary disease. 1 per 100 newborns. So this is very big probability, and we don't want to have these risks. What we can do if the baby already born and the baby has the mutations in both copies of our genome, we can try to correct this problem by gene delivery. We can take the normal gene and put this normal gene into the virus and inject this virus into the baby. So normal gene will go to the cells by virus and start working inside the cells, and the baby will use this gene in the development. But now we have only several drugs approved for clinical use. Maybe you know Zolgensma. It's a Novartis drug from the spinal muscular atrophy. So one injection price is $2 million, the problem is not price, it's also problem, but the problem is that we have very many diseases, like 7,000, and we have only several drugs applicable for some of these diseases. Yeah, it's we can't use such type of drug for every case, because we have no drugs. And another possibility is genome editing. We can try to fix the mutation inside the body, not put the new gene, but we can fix the mutation inside our genome. And some companies already create startups and create projects to develop the gene editing technologies for mutation correction using the CRISPR-Cas CRISPR-Cas technology. This is if we have already born baby, but what about the future baby? What about the baby which is not created yet? Can we change the program to create the baby with some parameters, or at least without mutations? That's the important thing, without mutations. Yes, we have some algorithm of CRISPR-Cas technology which we can use on the first cell stage. It's the zygote stage. Zygote is the first cell of our body when the oocyte and sperm create the first diploid cell. Two programs combined, and we have the first cell of our organism, and we can inject the genome editing system inside this first cell. After several days of incubation in a special incubator outside of body, we have embryo, and it's usually on the fifth day of development. We can take a few cells from embryo and analyze these cells by complete genome sequencing and to check is everything is okay, if we change where we want to change and doesn't change anywhere else. That whole genome is correct, but the mutation is corrected. But if we will look on the population, the situations of correct application of genomic editing is not so much a situations, because to use this technology, we should have the problem in both parents, in both people in the couple. For example, we can find the couples with the same set of mutations for deaf people, and very rare for dwarfs, but it's really rare case. Usually we have deaf couples with the mutation in connexin 26 gene, and all babies for this couple, for this family, will be with the same mutation. With all babies will be also deaf. Gene editing can fix this mutation on the first cell stage to create the baby with normal with normal hearing, or not deaf baby. But the very cheap, very low price of exome and very low price of genome sequencing make some genetic revolution right now, because it's so cheap that the big companies can offer to you the free of charge exome sequencing. You can take the tube in the supermarket and on the mall and put your saliva in this tube and put this tube in this special box. Then company make exome sequencing or genome sequencing, but usually it's exome because it's cheaper, and but the information is same. And for example, on this slide, if Zuckerberg start this project, your genetic information will be attached to your Facebook profile. It's like example. It's not real for today, but it's the nearest future. And the social network will have the all genotypes of all people. And if we will make some next step, if we will use this Facebook, now Meta platform, for to meet some people, yeah, like this Facebook dating was started by Facebook to meet the people. In this situation, if we have the genetic profiles, we can combine people without the same mutations in the genome. So all babies will be 100% health without monogenic diseases. So this combination of social networking and the genotyping can give us the complete elimination of cases of monogenic diseases in the next generations, in the next for our babies. Okay, I'm talking 20 minutes. How many I have?
Maybe 5 more. Is it okay for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's enough. So the last part of my futurological speech is the human cloning and stopping the aging program. As you know, we can clone mammals. This is the first big mammalian cloned by Dr. Jan Wilmuth in 1996. It's a dolly sheep. And here you can see the year when the mammal was cloned, except the first, it's a Xenopus, it's a frog. Then now we have practically every mammal cloned. It's only the several slides, not all publications, and we have technology to clone the humans for sure. We have it, but we not clone them because we have no reports about the cloned people because it's forbidden in most countries. It's illegal, but more and more reproductologists and medical clinical specialists say that cloning is a perfect way to reproduce because we have the verified genetic program already. When we create the baby in a couple, we have some probability to get the health baby or diseased baby. And the cloning is reproduction of verified good genetic program. We will get the 100% normal normal organism. And about immortality, if we will think, is the death is necessary for biological organisms, for example, for humans. No, it's not necessary, but it's inserted in our genetic program. It's just an element of our program. We have a lot of organisms who have no aging, like sharks or most of trees, and so on. We have the truly immortal organisms like this jellyfish, Turritopsis nutricula. This organism can reverse the genetic program back in the back way, like in the movie Benjamin Button story. This jellyfish can reverse development to the baby, then start again to the big jellyfish, then reverse again, and it can be as much time as you want. We have the instrumentation to detect how fast your genetic program go to the death. It's the epigenetic clocks. We can analyze the epigenetic profile of your DNA and say that your genetic program work very fast, for example, and in your real age, your genetic age is more than real. Or genetic program goes slow and you're in the, for example, 60 years, you have more young body than you should have in a 60 years, because the program going slow. And a lot of companies put big money into the death solving, how it works, how we can stop the genetic program. And I think that we very, very close to the genetic program stopping to solve the death. The last slide: how society will change after the invention of the anti-aging drug. I think that decreased value of time reduces people's motivation, because you have like unlimited time. Overpopulation will have to be solved by quoting of reproduction and maybe cloning, like a technology. And cancer will be the main health program in the immortal world. Thank you. That's my questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dennis. Yeah, give him some hands. This is very interesting. I think for some of us a little bit shocking that you say that all these or some of these dystopian predictions, what we thought it's dystopian, it's science fiction somewhere, and you say this would be possible in the next 10 to 20 years, you said. Can we do this? Of course, we cannot do it precisely, but let's clarify the thing. So the reverse aging, so the anti-aging drug you mentioned, and you said it's the near future. What do you think? When is it in possible in 10 years for the majority of the people, so the costs came down?
Yeah, my prediction is that we will have the solved program in the model organism, like mice or maybe fish, in 5 years, next 5 years. So after we will have the concept of program stopping in a fish, doesn't matter, fish, mice, it's from the genetic component, it's very, very similar. So from this point to the human, it's unpredictable, because it's not the question of technology, it's question of regulations. It's from mice to human several months, but it's not the problem of technology. It's regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. There was the second thing. You showed a slide where you wrote you must have the complete genome in your medical records, drugs assigned to your genotype and knowledge about your genetic bottleneck. You must have means, just to be clear, do you think it means today? So if I deal responsibly with my body, with myself, I have to have this by now?
Yes, because already today your medical records can be will have more information for clinicians if you have the complete genetic information in your medical records. More than 50 drugs already can be used only after genetic test, but it's a test of some genes, like for warfarin we are using two genes and so on. But it's not only pharmacogenetic, not only for drugs. It's really it's really good for your clinician in a lot of aspects, like predispositions to oncology, to diabetes, to stroke, and so on. Mm-hmm. I think that people should use this information already today.
Yeah. So we got the question from the audience about the technology. Human gap. So they call it the technology. So on the one hand, it's technologically possible. On the other hand, I don't know. They have not explained what they mean with the human. But there is a gap. There is obviously a gap between what we do and what is technology-wise possible. What is your take on that? What do you think? Why is this gap?
You mean gap between laboratory and the clinic?
No. I mean the gap. So you say if you look at technology, then it's everybody, every person in a responsible way should have this information. But on the other, today, because it's technology-wise, it's possible and it's useful. On the other hand, I would say almost nobody in Germany, at least, has this this records and the knowledge about the genetic bottleneck and so on. So there is a gap. There is a gap between what is technology-wise possible and what we do. How do you explain this gap?
Yeah, I understand. I think I understand. Because people don't have information about the positive impact to the health from the genetic information. Why we have this lack of information? Because the sequencing technologies going so fast, cheaper, really cheap, maybe last few years, 3-5 years, and we have no specialists like clinical genetics who can explain the positive effect of this information to the people. We now in Russia, for example, we have very big deficit, the absence of the genetic specialists who can explain the genetic information. It's a combination of some computer science and the biology, the genetics, and some clinical specialists. It's a practically new stuff, yeah, new type of job for clinics, and we start some programs, for example, in our university, to get students for this specialty, the specialists like between bioinformatics, genetics, and clinic specialist to make more students to make more clinicians with such type of knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What you said is that probably the one of the first applications of this technology would be by Facebook or Meta or the big technology companies. Why do you think so? Where come this prediction from?
Because the genetic information is very valuable for social networks, and Facebook has enough money to make exome of all people in the United States for free for these people, or only for the Zuckerberg's money. And if Meta will have this data, they will have the big data analysis, which gives them the next round of capitalization. They will found in this big data, they will found the correlations between genotype and phenotype, and it will give us the instrumentation interpretation of genetic information, real interpretation, because now we have some problems with real interpretation. My view is that Zuckerberg should start it right now. It's very good for company capitalization, this big data.
And in your case, why should we the people or you, let's talk about you, why would you give Meta and Mark Zuckerberg your genetic data? What is good for you in this case?
It will be offer that if you will have the genetic information in your profile for free for you, social network gives you some interpretations of this information. For example, I don't know, cancer predisposition. I already told you, stroke, some aging. Style and what you should eat, food profiling, and so on. They will give you it for free. Maybe some interpretations for free, another for money. Maybe they will change your phenotypic data for some interpretations. Like if you put your blood analysis into the system, so they will give you some interpretation for free.
And what can data? So okay, I understand. They give me information. I can live healthier or in a better way. And what can they do with the information?
Sorry?
What can Facebook do with this information, with the genetic information?
They can sell it to you, for example. Not as I say, not all interpretations will be free of charge.
Yeah,
some they can sell it. They can analyze the correlations between phenotypic and genotypic data, and these correlations can be like patented. Not patent. It's very informative for human health understanding, and it. I'm sure these new correlations will be very valuable for company. Mm-hmm. Maybe I have no clear capitalization model in my head now, but I'm sure this data is very, very valuable.
Yeah, I understand. By the way, this is to the audience. If you have questions, just show me, show up, and then we get a microphone to you. And there is one question. Dennis, one moment.
Hi. So it's not really a question; it's an answer for you, Sven.
Thanks.
Basically, what they can do is that they can use your information for everything, just like Facebook does today, socialize, just in another aspect. For example, if they'll analyze your data and find out that you're going to be suffering from diabetics, they can commercial diabetic material for you, or they can commercial analyze your health and commercial products for you, and they're going to get a lot of money out of it. Another option is that they're going to sell the information for insurance companies, especially in the U.S. So they're actually, it's kind of, has a very wide application. It's just like they're doing today with social, when you're watching some stuff that you're interested in, and they're kind of guessing your thought already and recycling the same information that they think you want to see. So they're just going to analyze your genome and the problems that you don't even know you have, and will commercialize your what they think is analyzing from their data what is your needs. So it's actually financially has a huge potential.
I understand.
Of course
I understand. I have some mixed feelings because I foresee that maybe I can live longer with this, me personally and my kids, and so on the other hand, I'm not really satisfied with having my genetic data with Facebook. Maybe I'm a bit conservative here, but on the other hand, of course, to give me, let's say, 5 to 10 more years to live, it's a big thing. Of course, I understand. Yeah.
The problem is that you can't really secure your genetic information for a long time. Like you can't now secure your face or your finger tips. It's already in the databases, and sometimes hackers can crack this database and take all information about your fingers or your face. Mm-hmm. So actually, it's just the same point. When we will have the genetic information in the medical records, so in one day, hackers take this information and then put it open, or I don't know. It's practically not... we have no technologies to save it for a long time.
Yeah. Probably you are right, because in these days I give it every day to the COVID tests.
But it's really hard it's hard to find some risks for you Exactly, for you. If some bad guys has your genetic information, what they can do? Only if you're very public person, like politics, top level politics, they can try to use it to make some black PR, yeah, mm-hmm. that you have a bad genome or something. But I don't know how we can use it for bad
points. Understand. Yeah, understand. Okay, maybe I have just to get used to it, to the thought. But another thing you mentioned, Dennis, I found really interesting, and I frame it like I understood. You said if we once have this genetic information, so everybody has his own genetic information, then in our society a new big problem comes up. You mentioned new discrimination by genotype. So if we realize that we are different by genotype, which we know, but not in Germany we say black on white, so not in words, not in written words or numbers. So let's dive a little bit deeper into this. You mentioned discrimination. Okay, I get another. So I have to pay more with the health insurance. Okay, maybe I don't get the job I want to have. What else is probably it's a problem there?
Maybe reproductive discrimination. If you have bad genotype, your looks not very attractive for reproduction.
They laugh at me. Yes, he said I will never find a girlfriend, which is not nice actually. What can we do? So this is I understand the problem, the discrimination problem, but what do you think personally? What can we do, or what should we do? What is the way out of this discrimination? Because of course the society and we don't want a new discrimination. We want the use case of living longer. Yes, okay, but not the new discrimination. What can we do?
Like usually we do it regulations. No, we have no ways. To prevent discrimination, only regulations, I think. Like for insurance, if we have like social country, we can say, okay, we have different probability of cancer because we know the genetic of these persons and we have different probability, but insurance will be just the same. It's forbidden to make the discrimination by insurance price. Mm-hmm. Also, concerning the job, we can make the regulation that even if person has some health problems caused by genetic specificity, and working on this job will be bad for his body, we can't discriminate him, and we don't have permission to use this parameter when we take this guy to the job. It's only regulation, no. Okay. Other mechanisms.
Yeah. I understand. I'm just looking for the regulation with the girls.
it's a hard point. Yeah.
Seems to. Okay. So to come to my last point, and you also mentioned the immortality thing, and the question: will we be immortal by this? I try to cut it down to my life and maybe my kids' life. So I have three kids in the age of 9, 6, and 4. So two in the primary school and one in the kindergarten. What would you do in my case? What would you do with yourself and your kids? What is your best recommendation? How to deal responsibly with all the genetic things which are possible?
That's a good question. Yeah, I think that the people who have some plans of reproduction in the future, they should put their hematas, oocytes, or sperm in a cryobank, because every year put some mutations, some genetic problems in your hematas, oocytes, and sperm. So if you froze it in the nitrogen, so it will be like in a Futurama cartoon, you know, when the fry put in the freezing machine and 1,000 years will be freezed. So it's really good point, but only for people who want to have reproduction in the future. Mm-hmm. Concerning the babies, what we can do for our baby, I think you can make the genetic analysis and try to use this information for correction of lifestyle. Now we can predict the best sport for baby. You can say that this sport is not for you. It's not your muscle type, not adaptive for this type of sport, but this sport is very good for you. Mm-hmm. Not so much interpretations right now, but in the nearest future it will be much more.
Yeah. I understand. And the thing with freezing the sperm, I already did, and my wife canceled the contract, so now I have the problem with the girls again. Okay, one very last question. Dennis, let me ask you a personal question, because the whole world, or probably the whole world, got to know your name some years ago. This was after this Chinese scientist, He Jiankui, was sent into prison because he edited the genome of two unborn kids in order to prevent them from HIV. And now I think Lulu and Nana, this is the name of the two kids, they are alive. And he is in prison for 3 years. But this is only the background. My question is, you said, at least it was written in our newspapers, you said that you would have a new plan of editing genes with unborn kids. So you would do it the same way like He Jiankui. So and every newspaper in the world covered your plan. My question is, are you still planning this?
Yeah, we have the very good system now to correct the mutation which caused the most frequent death, genetic death in people. And in Russia, we have about 500, maybe 1,000 families where both people in the couple has just the same mutation of this monogenic disease. It's just same mutation, and they death. And all babies in this couple will be death also. The problem is that such type of people don't want the hearing baby. They think that it's okay if baby will be like the parents, just the same like parents, because he will be closer to parents. Mm-hmm. He will be inside the family, inside this social group of deaf people. Now we have only few families who want to work with us and who really want the baby with normal hearing. So that's the problem, not the problem of technology. And it's also problem of the regulation. We don't have permission to make the pregnancy with the edited embryo today. But if we will have the pair who agree with the procedure, and we will make all checkups, all controls, a lot of genetic sequencing of these parents and the embryos, so then we can ask for a proof of the procedure of implantation, embryo implantation, embryo transfer to the mother. So for me, I think that this case is only one ethical case of embryo editing we have in a population.
Okay, so as you don't want to be sent to prison, I understood. You wait for the proper regulation for this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us, Dennis, and giving us this information, which is really, some might say this is a little bit shocking. Others might say this is really eye-opening. Thank you. Thank you so much. It is really inspiring to learn from you. Have a great day and a great year's end in Moscow. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Danke dir fürs Zuhören im Podcast Zukunft entdecken, entwickeln, erreichen. Wenn ich dich inspirieren konnte, dann teile es gern mit deinen Freunden und mit deiner Familie. Mehr Infos zu deiner Zukunft, wie man sein bestmögliches Zukunftsbild entwickelt und wie man es erreicht, findest du in meinem Blog unter jansky.de. Und dort habe ich dir auch noch ein kleines Geschenk für deine Zukunft hinterlegt. Hole es dir gleich ab unter jansky.de/Geschenk. Bis zum nächsten Mal und auf eine großartige Zukunft.